Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Kazin, who's a professor of history at Georgetown University and author of American Dreamers, How the Left Changed the Nation, America Divided, The Civil War of the 1960s, Godly Hero, The Life of William Jennings Bryan, and The Populist Persuasion in American History. He also co-eds Dissent magazine and writes a column for The New Republic. His latest article at The New Republic is The End of the Christian Right. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Kazin.
Good to be here, Ian.
And I suppose to a lot of people that would be music to their ears from your, even though you didn't necessarily choose that title, The End of the Christian Right, from your lips to God's ears.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Christian right's in trouble for various reasons that I talk about, write about in the article. They're obviously split right now about who to support against Romney. And that's pretty much going to ensure, I think, that Romney gets the nomination. Also, in a deeper sense, I think they're getting old. They have no leader to take the place of people like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and other figures who, whatever you think of them, were important figures in American life when they were in their heyday. And also, there's been a lot of polls and good studies by sociologists, political scientists recently, which show that young people are less and less drawn to evangelical churches, especially more conservative ones. And the issue that's been most prominent in recent years that's been promoted by the Christian right, opposing gay marriage, opposing gay rights generally, is doing very badly. That is, gay rights is doing well. Gay marriage, of course, six states, pretty soon probably seven states, my own state of Maryland, for example. And the one issue where Christian right is still quite relevant, I think, is abortion. But even there, public opinion hasn't really changed very much about abortion. So, you know, I wanted to raise the point that even though the Christian right is still prominent and the media covers them exhaustively, especially in relation to the Republican campaign, in fact, they're in trouble. And I think and hope that they'll be in more trouble as the years go by.
Well, they appear to be in trouble in South Carolina, although they're fighting back. And there seems to be a sort of a rearguard action there by Newt Gingrich, who's been gotten a ton of money pouring in from Super PAC, from Sheldon Adelson and others. Of course, prior to this primary down there, the Christian right seemed to be quite concerned. There was a meeting at a Texas ranch involving Wildman and the Gary Bauer and a bunch of the luminaries of the religious right. But they're pretty much stuck with Santorum, who, ironically, of course, turns out he won Iowa, but he's not going to go anywhere. And they didn't do that well in 2008, neither. They didn't really unite around Huckabee until it was too late. Mm-hmm. And after all, it was Huckabee who made the famous quip about Romney, that he looks like the guy that fired you. So that doesn't speak well of their tactics. They can't seem to choose a candidate and get behind him, because clearly, had they done so, or at least not made a mistake with Perry, they'd be in much better shape against Romney.
No, I think that's right. And, you know, part of the problem, too, of course, is that even though most people who consider themselves Christian conservatives are very supportive of what they would call free market economics, you know, libertarian economics, pro-big business economics, you know, nevertheless, they would rather stress the so-called social issues. And those issues are not winners. They might be in South Carolina in a state election, but they're not winners nationally. And of course, the Tea Party, even though most people in the Tea Party are Christian conservatives, Tea Party people did not stress those issues in 2010. And so there really is not a unified Christian right in the way there was much more of one. Pat Robertson was riding high, and before that when Jerry Falwell was. And so, you know, when a movement crests and begins to decline, it's difficult to put it back together again. And also something else I didn't go into in the article, but it's worth mentioning. A lot of young evangelicals are no longer quite so interested in the older, you know, sort of body issues, you might say. They're interested in poverty. They're interested in being missionaries in Africa and do something about AIDS. You got people like Rick Warren, who, of course, was tried to be sort of nonpartisan between McCain and Obama in 2008. We'll probably do the same this year. He's not really a member of the Christian right, even though certainly he's an evangelical. And, you know, a lot of figures of his kind are trying to avoid being so partisan. So that's a problem, too.
Well, it's pretty clear, isn't it, Michael Kazin, that the millennial generation are kind of post-racial and post-sexual, and I'm sure that translates to millennial young Christians as well. In fact, I've met a number who are quite progressive. So it seems that time is against them, and there's a new generation emerging, and that they're simply relics in terms of their social dogma. But it's always been clear to me, at least, that the religious right and the evangelicals, particularly those on television, have always been a front for right-wing politics. Their theology has always been somewhat dubious.
Well, I disagree with you there. I mean, I'm you know, I'm not a religious person myself, but I have respect for people who find their truths in religion. And I think, you know, when I wrote this book about William Jennings Bryan that you mentioned, biography of him, which was a empathetic book, though not necessarily a sympathetic one, I went to speak at various conservative Christian colleges. And, you know, I mean, these people have, they believe in their theology as much as I believe in my secular liberalism, progressivism. So, you know, but I think that when you apply that to the political contest, when you apply that political competition, when you try to see that everything Obama does is wrong, everything Republicans are trying to do is right, then you've got a problem. And that's a problem they've fallen into, that they over-politicized certain issues. And and then when you have, you know, young evangelicals, as you were discussing, who say, no, we care more about poverty, we care more about AIDS, we care more about sort of the weak, you know, and the meek, as Jesus talked about in the Beatitudes, then they don't know quite what to say, and they end up looking angry and negative and censorious.
Well, you know, we could go through the history of those that have fallen from grace in terms of televangelists.
Yep.
there's a pretty rich history of that. And some of the current ones, like the Reverend Dollar and others, seem to be more interested in money than theology. But in that regard, Ralph Reed, who was the head of the Christian Coalition, if you ever read his memos that he wrote soliciting a job at Enron, where he wanted to be their lobbyist and what he would perform for them in terms of bringing in the religious right to help this criminal organization run by Ken Lay. And he did the same with Jack Abramoff, the famous lobbyist, or infamous lobbyist, I should say. He worked for him to con the Indians out of, casino owners out of money. It does make you wonder whether these people are more drunk with power than they are with...
I mean, I think I was talking more about the rank and file.
Right.
People who really, I mean, think that America is going to hell, not to put too fine a point on it, and believe that only what they consider strong heterosexual families, going to church, praying, trying to get sinners redeemed, only that is the road to back to a moral nation again. And so, of course, they don't necessarily have leaders to follow anymore, but they are always looking for them. And as you say before, they're not going to find them this year. They don't like Romney. They'll accept him because they'll have nobody else. But you know, Gingrich, of course, it's, his marital problems coming back to haunt him with his second wife speaking out against him today, just as he seems to be gaining. So, you know, as you say, they are hamstrung by the fact that they have no candidate, and the candidates that they get behind, at least momentarily, have feet of clay.
Well, NPR did an interesting interview with a Gingrich supporter, a very devout Christian woman from Lubbock, Texas, who brought her family to volunteer for Gingrich in Iowa and through New Hampshire, is now working down in South Carolina. And she was attracted to him as a Christian because of his redemption. You know, that he basically, in spite of the obvious hypocrisy of having an affair with the ex-wife Marion, who's going on ABC tonight to talk about his call for an open marriage, he was married to her while he was having an affair with Callista, who he's now married to. At the same time, he was impeaching Bill Clinton for a minor sexual dalliance. But all is forgiven. That is a force not to be underestimated in evangelical theology, right? Redemption.
That's true. I think that's true, and it's you know, that's one of the redeeming factors about Christianity, of course, that whatever you do, you can be redeemed.
But, that could be surely that could be abused, right?
Yeah, but again, I mean, you got someone like Santorum, of course, is a Catholic, not a Protestant, but and so is Gingrich, for that matter. So you've got a sort of ecumenism on the Christian right that is really new in American history. But in some ways, Santorum is sort of too good to be true. These people, I think he said recently that not only has he never had an affair with another woman, he's never actually sat on a couch next to another woman, not his wife. And that's just that's just hard for anybody who's not from a fairly small circle around him to take seriously.
It does sound extraordinary. So what do you think is likely to happen then, Michael Kazin, down in South Carolina? They haven't been able to stop Romney. Their vote is split, and there's a last-ditch effort. Do you think there'll be any residual grudge against Romney, or are they obedient and will rally around the Mormon?
They have a real problem. I mean, as I mentioned in this piece in the Republic, with George W. Bush, you would see him, they had the president they wanted. He was born again. He clearly was quite willing to use evangelical language, talking about the war in Iraq as a crusade and so forth. And he had a very skillful speechwriter, Michael Gerson, who's now an op-ed columnist for the Washington Post, who wrote many of Bush's most really eloquent speeches, whether you agree with him or not. Especially on the war in Iraq and on terrorism, but now you know I think Romney's likely to squeak through in South Carolina, and I can't imagine anybody else winning the nomination now. If anybody else surged to the front and began to get a lot of delegates, the so-called Republican establishment from Karl Rove down would try to stop them right away, because clearly in the polls nobody else even comes close to Obama. So they've got a problem, and the Christian right could very well sit on their hands, not necessarily not voting for Romney in the fall, but not turning out the large numbers. And of course, remember, 2004, even though George W. Bush won the popular vote pretty easily, if he lost Ohio, he would have lost the election to Kerry. And one of the reasons he won Ohio was because there was an anti-gay marriage initiative on the ballot there, and people in the Christian right turned out very big numbers to support Bush, as well as, of course, to come out and vote on that initiative. And the election was fairly close in Ohio. And again, Kerry could have been a minority president if it wasn't for the Christian right. I don't see anything like that surge taking place this year.
Right. Kerry would have had a hell of a job governing with a $1.2 million deficit in the popular vote, which Bush had a $560,000 vote deficit in Florida. That didn't seem to bother him.
I think it would have been a tough road to hoe.
Michael Kazin, again, professor of history at Georgetown University and author of American Dreamers, How the Left Changed a Nation. Just to touch on your last book, American Dreamers, I'm quite puzzled by the rise of Ron Paul, who we haven't mentioned yet, and he is certainly a factor. He did well in all of the races so far and probably will come in third in South Carolina. One of the things I find extraordinary about this is that the young voters are flocking to Ron Paul, and so are anti-war Democrats, which leads me to ask you the question of what the hell is wrong with the Democratic Party? How could they lose the young voters from 2008 who swept in for Obama, and how could they lose the anti-war vote?
Well, I'm not so sure what you say there, Ian, is right about young Democrats flocking to Paul. I mean, I don't see that in the polls. I mean, I think one of the things you do see is that young voters, you know, tend to be idealists. They tend to like people who talk about a completely different way to run the country. They tend to be, as young people, God bless them, less pragmatic, less, you know, saying, well, we can't do this, we can't do that. And Paul offers a completely different way of looking at government, looking at foreign policy. I mean, he, of course, doesn't want government to do anything abroad or at home. Except perhaps to protect the borders. And of course, it's for legalization of marijuana and so forth. So I think there's a way in which, you know, some young Democrats are really supporting it, but more it's probably young independents, some of whom were excited by Obama. But if you look at the polls by the breakdown by age group, young people are still the group that is much more pro-Obama than others. And, you know, we could argue about this probably for a long time, but I think Obama's going to be able to run in this year, saying he got troops out of Iraq, he's committed to scaling down the number of troops in Afghanistan. It's not certainly what I would have liked in Afghanistan, but I think he's going to be able to hold on to sort of, if you call it the anti-war vote, as opposed to Romney, who's been saying, you know, full scale ahead, we shouldn't move anybody out of Iraq.
And we shouldn't. We should go to war against Iran.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Sir Michael Kazin.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Kazin, who's a professor of history at Georgetown University and author of American Dreamers: How the Left Changed a Nation, America Divided, the Civil War of the 1960s, and Godly Hero: The Life of William Jennings Bryan and the Populist Persuasion in American History. He also co-edits Dissent magazine and writes a column for The New Republic. His latest article at The New Republic is The End of the Christian Right. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again Sunday at 11 with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.